Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to be talking to Joey Bravo, whose film Hammer Jackson, I freaking love this movie. It was at Filmvasion Los Angeles in 2019. As I recall, we got Joey right here. He can hear me. Say hey.
Hey, Internet.
The man is here, and he is kind enough that his film is part of the Discover Indie Film TV series. It's in Season 3, Episode 8, which is, if you like comedy, that is a great comedic episode. Starts with Shoot 'Em Dead, then you have Hammer Jackson, and then it finishes up with a film called Ralentando, which, needless to say, it's a fun time. So thank you for letting your film be a part of Discover Indie Film.
Absolutely.
And where we always start, instead of talking about Hammer Jackson right away, I'm really fascinated to hear what came before that. So what did inspire you to get into this film game?
Well, that's a very good, unique question. So I started acting when I was 5 years old, and we'll speed up the story. But essentially, when I was little, I loved Jim Carrey and stuff, and I thought you had to be an adult to be an actor. So I never actually pursued it or got interested in it. And one day, my grandmother took me to see a production of Bugsy Malone, the Paul Williams musical from the 70s, where it's a musical gangster film, for those who don't know. And instead of the guns firing bullets, they fire whipped cream, I believe, in the play they did. I don't know if the film, it's been a while.
I think it's like meringue in the film.
Meringue? Yeah. Okay, so I saw that and I went, oh my God, I can actually be an actor. So in the my grandma signed me up to do acting. And I just did musical theater for about 15 years. Good thing nobody liked me in high school because I was doing like Bye Bye Birdie and The Music Man and stuff like that. And so I was always like, wow, like this is a, you know, it's such an odd thing to do compared to the bubble of school. And then my one of my mentors was like, hey, you should, we're in Los Angeles. Why don't you go to the Groundlings? That's where you got to go. And I just believed him. So I went to Los Angeles and I studied at Second City, UCB, Iowa West, the Groundlings, Flappers, Playhouse West. And then I...
And was that person, the person who told you to head out to LA and hit those types of places, was that a teacher? Was that a mentor?
He was a mentor. He was an art teacher at the Rec Center. His name was Patrick Tierney, and he's a genius. He really specializes in Art Deco, and he stopped making things around the 60s because he considers that the hippies ruined art. And so he has this very, like, cool kind of thing. And my friend actually brought me to him because I was very down and out. I didn't have any friends. And then he saw how sad I was. He's like, oh, I can't fix this. And he brought me to a group of artists that would meet every week in Redondo Beach and have a fire pit dinner and stuff. And I grew up having a way to talk about art and creativity with them that I didn't get at home or at school. So that was kind of his thing. But I went out there, I did the acting for a bit, and I realized that I was not a rubber band. In acting, you have to give a performance that's very emotional, it's very personal, it's very real. And then they have to tell you, oh, great, but you're too tall, or we don't like this or that. And then you have to suck it up and go home. And I lived about 30 miles from all the auditions, so it was a long drive back through the traffic. And I was not able to be cool and collected, and okay, I didn't get it, and be an emotional wreck in front of people for money. So I was sitting one day at this awful, terrible school, and I saw there were three doors, and one of them was for the actors, one of them was for the writers, and the other one was for the directors. And whenever the actors needed help, like, oh, I'd love to act in something, nobody showed up. I mean, just nobody. When the writers needed help, maybe the actors would show up, come over, but they're like, how do we film this? And that was that. But the directors, everybody came over and wanted to work with them. And I thought, well, gee, I can't tell the stories I want as an actor because A, I'm failing these auditions. B, I don't speak Spanish and I'm Hispanic and I'm not getting roles because they're like, what do you mean you can't speak Spanish?
Right. They wanted to typecast you.
Right, right. And three, because of my weight, I was always the goofy best friend or the luchador. I remember one guy wanted me to put on a wrestling mask and wrestle his client to see if he wanted to cast me. It's like stuff like that. So I'm like, you know what? I want to direct. It's always something I wanted to try to do. But I did. So anyway, I decided to make the film. And I took my life savings, which at the time was about 10 grand. Most of that was not from acting. And then I shot the film to just see if I could direct. And what ended up in the film festival and on Amazon was the one that was just, do I even know how to direct a crew? That's the short version.
Right. So that is literally after bebopping around LA and being completely disillusioned with acting classes and directing the whole, there is actually a machine designed really, and this is a rough thing to say, to take advantage of the people who have goals and dreams and just make sure that they help you pay your rent.
It's part of the American scam economy. We're kind of right now living in this thing where everyone's scamming everybody, whether you're like, oh, I can do this for you. I will wash your car. I will. It's kind of this whole thing. And it's kind of like the OG version of that. And I just didn't want other people to continue to take advantage of me and the people around me. And I thought, well, I still want to tell these stories. I shouldn't abandon the art form because everyone's creepy and awful.
Right.
So I decided to direct myself. And the goal out here in Arizona is to open my own film studio and have other people like buy equipment and just give it to people to film, because no one's doing that because there's no money in it. And that's why I'm going to do it.
And were you writing the whole time too? Like, or when you decided to make your own film, did you say, okay, I'm going to make my own. Now I've got to write my first script, or had you been writing all along? And
I hadn't been writing. So I was like, well, let's see. So from the musicals and stuff I was doing, I thought, well, gee, I know what a script looks like. I mean, I know whatever pages I got from The Music Man, I'm like, well, that's a script. I mean, I've read The Wizard of Oz as a script. Like, let's try that. And so I spent a long time making a really, really bad script. And but that was kind of the point. I eventually kind of decided with Hammer Jackson as it came out, I wanted it to be like a Apocalypse Now, Judge Roy Bean TV movie, and kind of Big Lebowski kind of thing that's very similar. And but then when the actors came in, they were so good. I had to actually, oh, my God, and I rewrote the whole film for them because they were so good.
So you casted, and that's when, because Hammer Jackson was originally a feature script, or still is.
Yes, it was. And then I figured, because I shot the cheapest 5 minutes in the entire script.
In which something fun happened, because obviously, like, there, you could have had, like, I don't know, at some point those guys got to eat, like...
Well, yeah, I mean, I could Scorsese it, but the thing was, it really, I picked the cheapest thing because I figured, well, look, if I'm a good screenwriter, and I'm not, but if I am, then every scene should be worth looking at. So whatever, like, so that's the one I picked. So stuff happens, but it actually wasn't intended that stuff happened.
But then you cast that short with the intention, and then it was, I guess, the two main actors. And
Dennis,
then you watch them, Hayden. And you decided, okay, now I'm going to write for these guys and the voices they've brought to the characters, and you decided to just put way more into it.
Yeah, like if I wrote something like that ham sandwich doesn't look so good, the way Dennis or Idris Degas would read that line, I went, oh my God, they meant that. So I went, oh, I have to start taking this more seriously as a filmmaker.
That's some pretty fortunate casting too, because Lord knows I've met more than a few aspiring filmmakers who, through the casting process, got someone who sucks and brings the material down.
I'm an actor, and so I know, and I would do weird stuff. Like I actually auditioned them personally. We rented a space at a certain outer space themed casting studio, and they came in and I read for them. And they were all confused. They're like, wait, what do you mean you're reading for me? And I was matching their energy the whole time. And then when I would do another take, I would actually do it wrong. I would do the worst acting choice I possibly could. And if they followed me and kept that real, they made it, I said, okay, they're a good actor. They can handle this. A lot of actors try to get all ethereal. A lot of directors get ethereal and say, oh, do this more vanilla. Or like, what if you were Baby Spice? How would you take? But for me, I'm like, can you bounce off of me and in the moment make a bad decision and try to patch it? Like, that was what it was about. And they all came in and just crushed it, especially the guy who plays Shane in the film. I had $500 to rent an RV, which I was hoping to explode, but we didn't have the money for that. And we couldn't find one. And my friend said, I know this guy. He wants to be an actor. He lives in an RV. So I went over to his place. I had the script at 3 a.m. We were like in our Ralph's parking garage. And I'm like, hey, can you read these lines? And he's like, oh, okay. And he did a pretty fair job. But I was like, well, I really just want the RV. He came in and everybody on that set came over to me in private and said, who is he? He was that good. And he stole the entire thing. His name was Joe Sepulveda. And just an absolute monstrous talent who just happened to have the RV I wanted. I got very lucky.
And he is good. He is really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you have is an intense scene there. Your version of a standoff.
Yeah. My version of a standoff trying to channel Sam Raimi. But I think I got more like, oh man, I was aiming for Sam Raimi, but I think I hit, oh, what's his name? He directed the Addams Family movies and Men in Black.
Yeah. Sonnenberg, Barry Sonnenfeld.
Yeah.
Barry Sonnenfeld? Sonnenfeld.
Barry Sonnenfeld. Yeah. I went more Barry Sonnenfeld, but I was going for Sam Raimi, and you never think of them together. But now that I've said that, they've got a very similar.
Look, I'll camera. Add that Sonnenfeld, he's no slouch, and he was the Coen brothers cinematographer for years. That guy's got some problems.
Oh, yeah, and Big Trouble and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, he's great. He's great. And it's funny because I'm glad to mention him because I feel like no one talked about how great he really is as a director.
All right, so you have this. Actually, it sounds like you had a really good experience making this.
Oh, yeah.
These 5 minutes of your feature.
Oh, so fun.
And then you hit the festival circuit running, I assume.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about the festival circuit, so I just spent way more money than I should have just submitting it, because if you don't decide how much money you're going to spend first, you just spend too much money. So
I do know of a film or two that spent more on their festival run than they did making the film.
And festival run was hard because I decided as an actor before I made it that I was never going to give anybody money ever again. And to this day, that's true. Even if someone's like, oh, it's $20 to come on in, and I don't pay it. I would rather miss out on opportunities to give somebody another dollar. So when it came to like, oh, you have to do this, I was like, oh, crap. So I did, but that was kind of the last bit. I just don't – I got my first film I ever made, with your help, of course, on Amazon. And I didn't have any social media. I didn't have any, like, I didn't throw all this money at it. I didn't get egotistical. I made something good. It was recognized. There it is. There's too much fear. And fear causes all sorts of things, especially the loss of what little money you have.
You know, I always, I think this will resonate for you. For decades now, I've been saying, like, films would be so much better if being a successful filmmaker was like a middle class lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't drawing all these people into the tournament to try to be the next Spielberg, and it was just people who really gave a fuck.
Yeah.
And would do it if it's the same financial reward as teaching second grade, then we'd have great films, and then, you know, we could use public funding and just say, here, you're willing to work this hard and make $45,000 for the year. Here's a $2 million budget to, and you'll get $45,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, no, that's why I'm opening a studio, hopefully in Arizona, because I went around even here, and for the equipment we need to film, I want this to be able to be picked up by Netflix, and I have an equipment requirement. Only 3 companies in the entire state can give me the equipment. And I drove over to one of them. It took me 6 hours to get there and back. And the guy told me, he's like, well, because there's only 3 companies, I'm going to charge you premium. I'm going to charge you more than LA. And I don't really care about making your movie or independent cinema. I'm here for your money. So now the budget has gone up by double because of this equipment, which is going to be ginormous. And yeah, if this was able to be much smaller, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to give people, I'm going to rent like RE, I'm going to buy RE minis and just hand them out. I don't
care. Because
I'm
the cost, if they're charging exorbitant prices to rent, it does make sense to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. And then give it to people because it's needed. So hopefully with the company I put together, the grant will be, if you apply for the grant, we want to make your film. I'll just give you the equipment. And then, you know, along with the insured and all that, go. you know, and then you can have my crew is your crew, whatever. I'm so tired of ego, fear, and this weird fame money bubble that I don't know what this is all about. I didn't come here to, I'm very Andy Warhol in the sense that I feel like art isn't necessary. Art is something that somebody makes and then gives to somebody who doesn't really want it. And so I don't understand why you have to spend this much money making something that nobody wants until it's given to them. It just makes no sense whatsoever. We're not Apple here.
Yeah,
we're not building.
And I believe this info came before we started recording, but because we chatted a bit before we started recording. But the town you've moved to in Arizona sounds like a movie set of sorts. I mean, it's a small town on a hill, 5 miles from the Mexico border.
Yeah, yeah. The town called Bisbee. It's an old mining town on a mountain. It's about a mile high up. So that means that it's 20 degrees colder than the rest of Arizona at all times. We get snow. We get monsoons and lightning storms. Right now, the weather's like 88 and the humidity is like 50, 60 sometimes. It's great. It's very green. My friend came here and he put his arm around me and he said, "You moved to a film set, you smart son of a bitch, because you can film anything out here. There's plains, there's mountains. There's a whole town that my friend restored to 1955, complete with original, like, Indian motorcycles. It's called Lowell. If you type in historic Lowell, you'll find it in Bisbee. You could film in the 50s. You could film in the 1910s. There are mansions here from the 1910s that, like, people own. It is absolutely completely possible, and I'm going to do it because Hammer Jackson lives.
A small town like that, right? Yeah. Everyone who leaves the LA area says, yeah, you can actually walk into a coffee house and say, "Hey, is it okay if we shoot here?" And I've heard sometimes the response is, "Well, sure, but can we stick around and watch?"
Yeah. The town's giving me hotel rooms for nothing, just because, like, here, your cast and crew can stay with us. They're giving us locations for nothing. Like, "Oh, here's the keys to my building. Let me know when you're done filming." It is amazing. The only problem is the equipment is not here. So I have to, the goal is to film Hammer Jackson, the feature, which will be in April, and then create the studio, and then hopefully create the independent scene in Arizona. Because right now it looks like the Arizona scene is horror exploitation films. And exploitation does not create industry. Never does. Exploitation's just about the money. That's why Spielberg was a genius, because you had all these Roger Corman rubber monster movies that made their money, but they were in this little thing. "Oh, let's just watch the giant squid attack the pretty lady." But when Spielberg put the story behind it and the money behind it to make Jaws, that inspired people to make blockbusters and those independent, crazy films of the 70s and 80s. So you have to have a certain level of finesse and story to create industry. It's not just about getting... So that's the tough part. So Hammer Jackson has to stand for industry, not exploitation. And then I just got to keep running and try to get this thing off the ground and actually help people do stuff, because I'm tired of not being able to do stuff out of fear and ego. It's ridiculous.
I understand. I have to ask, because, of course, I got, in a way, the film festival you're at, Filmvasion LA in 2019, like, that was...
One of the best film festivals I've ever been to. I mean, you genuinely care. I met lots of great people. I saw great films. They were wonderfully picked out. There was no film there that I was like, "Oh my God." Like, I was just, no, it was wonderful. The space was great. Everyone was kind. 10 out of 10 would submit again. It was, yeah. Like, and I'm not just saying that because you're a real person. I mean, it's been over a year since we've last really talked, and I want to be here because I like you and I like your festival. I like what you stand for. And you actually got my film on a streaming platform, which everyone says they do, or they make it the grand prize or whatever, but you came through. You did what you said, and that's so rare. Anyway, continue with what you were saying.
Well, no, I was actually getting to the fact that that was our last festival before... Well, that was our last film invasion before COVID hit. And I was actually curious, were you a little safe from COVID in Bisbee? Was it low enough population that life didn't get totally shut down on you? Or did that shut you down, and did you lose an hour and a half? I meant year and a half of Hammer Jackson's life making it to feature.
No, we weren't really ready to shoot till a couple months ago. What happened was, I won't tell the story, but I met an amazing woman 2 weeks before lockdown, and she lived in Upland, which is like an hour away from where I lived in Torrance. And she had an old dog, so I ended up moving in with her 2 weeks into our relationship, and we were in a 500 square foot studio, and we ended up in Arizona together because her AC busted and there's no insulation in the house. So you touch the wall and you burn your hand. You go, ah, the wall. Like, it was just, so we went to Arizona because her mom had a condo with AC, ended up in Bisbee. And she rewrote my entire film from the ground up. She looked at all of my scripts from the last 7 years. 7 years. She looked at all of them. We put them up on a big board. And she made it better than I ever could have imagined. So now it's hers. And I'm just going to do the visuals. But so that was what we were. That's why it took so long from the pandemic. We were making it better. Now characters have arcs. It's wonderful.
So you said, so in a way, you started collaborating. And now these are co-written.
Yeah, Hammer Jackson was saved because Hammer Jackson was saved by my partner, Sandra, over COVID. And she saved me. Yeah.
Fantastic to hear that. And I love the idea of what you're doing. I got to admit, I'm wishing I could visit. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe someday. Bisbee sounds pretty freaking amazing.
If you come down, I can put you up, no problem. Like, you don't have to spend a dime. Honestly, it's that easy. It's so wonderful.
Excellent.
The cool thing about this town, before I get into it, there are actually successful artists who have moved here. So besides the original hippies who are here, there's a woman who understands glass bead making who was taught by World War I veterans in a factory in France. Like, her glass is like, oh my God. But there's a set designer for the Academy Awards, like, lives next door. There's a woman whose artwork has been featured in the Smithsonian. Like, there are actually, like, they all come to this little town to, like, to just relax and hang out and make stuff. And what I love about it is when I tell people, oh, I'm going to bring a big truck through here, I want to film this. They're like, okay. No one in this town over the last year has told me, you can't do that. That's stupid. I'm doing that. My friend's doing that. What makes you? None of that. Yes. How can I help? That's all I've ever heard in this town. So yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic. A genuine artist enclave.
Oh yeah. No, it's real. And it was an accident to come here, actually.
How did you discover it? I'm just curious. Was it, did you just hear
during
a rumor
the pandemic,
about it?
Well, during the pandemic, my now fiance and I would get in our car and we'd go castle hunting. And so we would drive around and we would look at all the millionaires in Los Angeles who had built their houses into castles with drawbridges and, like, all the brick, you know, the big stone. So we're like, let's go castle hunting. And we ended up in Tucson for the air conditioning. And then let's go castle hunting. And we drove to Tombstone and we're like, we should see the world's largest, like, rose bush, whatever. By the way, no permits to film in Tombstone. Why is nobody doing a low budget film in Tombstone? What's wrong with people? Anyway, so we got there and the rose bush wasn't blooming. So we just kept driving and we hit this town. It was amazing. We couldn't get out of the car because of COVID. We signed a lease within a week and we just moved in here.
Well, that's a good story. There you go.
I mean, that's how we ended up. You know, I try not to worry. I go with the flow. And so far, I'm on a podcast and I'm not dead yet. So
you are alive and you are speaking to me and you're using your Abbey Road coffee cup, which much appreciation.
God, I love the Beatles.
And, is there anything else you want to share before we transition to the other situation?
I don't mean to
be cagey, people. I'm just, you know, Joey's also going to give me his answers to the four questions. That'll be the podcast after this one.
I talk a lot.
I mean, I don't want to cut you off, basically, before we...
There's not much I want to add. I think I would say that right now it looks like you can film in other places. The problem is the reason people don't film in Tombstone, which, again, it requires no permits or anything. You could just come here and do a Western, is that people want to film in Santa Monica. They don't want to film. They don't want to make these small movies. They want to be gigantic. But the thing is, if you really want to make a movie, you have to make the movie any way possible. And, you know what? This is the last thing I'll leave with. This is Charlie Adler, my great teacher, told me this once and stuck with me ever since. Just never give people false hope. You know, just never give people false hope. And because people buy gifts for their kids on false hope. They pay for their car on false hope. So just if you're not ready, you're not ready. Just be honest with people. And, be on time. Don't be a dick.
I was going to say the don't give people false hope is a really nice way to say don't bullshit.
No, there's no reason. There's no reason to. Don't bullshit, people. Come on.
I'm with you. I'm with you. All right. Well, with that being said, I guess I'll do what I always refer to as the house cleaning, which is naming all the websites and social media handles for the festivals and TV series. And honestly, I'm dedicated to not adding another, but I actually think I'm adding another. I'll tell you about it when we're off the air. But But is there you're not on Instagram, right? You said.
No, I don't have any social media.
You don't do social media. Is there a website you want to mention for people who are into the idea of Hammer Jackson? No.
I got nothing. You know, honestly, like if you give a shit, bother Jeff.
I'll give him your email. But all right. Well, Hammer Jackson, kick-ass short film, short comedy, action, thriller, whatever you want to call it. It's a genre crossing, I would say. It is in the Discovery Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. It's in season 3, episode 8. You should, of course, watch all 4 seasons. But go ahead, start with the episode that has Hammer Jackson in it, because start with some laughs. If you want to learn more about Discovery Indie Film, which is this podcast that gave birth to a Prime Video TV series, go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on the social media, it's @DIFWINS. And the film festival where I met Joey, that was Film Invasion LA that we were talking about. And you learn about that, filminvasionla.com or @FilmInvasionLA on the social medias. And Fila, as we call it affectionately, has a sister festival. Fila is in the Film Invasion LA is every June, and then every November we've got the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, and that's shermanoaksff.com or @shermanoaksff on social media. And now I think I'm done. All right. I'm going to thank Joey for chatting.
I'm going to say you're welcome.
And anybody who listened to this, I'm going to thank you for listening. Yeah.